great leaders were influential. The poor leaders had the power button. So the easy button is power, right? I have the title. I have the position. Do what I say. I don't need to explain myself.
Mm-hmm.
Saw lots of that. And then I saw some very influential leaders, you know, and where they would influence, they would listen, they would participate, but they had high expectations and they had demanded a lot, but you never felt, you felt that they contribute, you felt good around them. You wanted to work for those people.
Welcome to the CEO Sessions, hosted by Ben Fanning. And here's Ben.
Welcome. Today's episode is all about respect. That's right, R-E-S-P-E-C-T. Get respect from employees quickly. When employees respect you, they are much more likely to be engaged, be productive, and be aligned to the company mission. And we've got a great leader who has lots of tips for you, Mark Whitten, who is the president and CEO over at Spartanburg Steel in Spartanburg, South Carolina. Mark started early on in his career on the plant floor, rose through the ranks, three different countries, several different companies. And man, here he is today leading the charge at Spartanburg Steel. Spartanburg Steel has many marquee car customers such as BMW, and they are getting it done there. Now, in this episode, you're not only going to get tips and strategies about earning the respect of every employee, but we're getting into the difference between power versus influence and how to use each, and also the art of leading by example. You're going to get a lot of this today. Enjoy the episode. If you're an executive at a crossroads in your career and thinking about quitting, do this before you do anything else. Head over to benfanning.com/quit to receive a free signed copy of my number one best-selling book, The Quit Alternative, The Blueprint for Creating the Job You Love Without Quitting. You'll learn the critical questions you must answer before you make such an impactful decision. Go to benfanning.com/quit to get this valuable resource for just the cost of shipping. Hey, Mark, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for being here. Appreciate it, Ben.
Yes. Well, great to have you on today. So let's get this rolling. You're in Spartanburg, South Carolina, but you're Canadian. What brought you as a leader from Canada all the way down to Spartanburg, South Carolina?
Yeah, great story. Great question. Well, I started my career in manufacturing at Freightliner Heavy Trucks, actually, and I was a shop floor employee. So I started out, I went to college, took some business courses, but I ended up getting a job because it paid well. Working on the shop floor and slugging steering gears and frame rails for big, heavy trucks.
Well, hard work, but well-paid work, huh?
Yeah, it was. And it was great experience. And frankly, I mean, we'll get into this, I'm sure. You know, a lot of my leadership thought process is built off of my experience being an hourly employee on the shop floor and truly seeing the other side of it really gave me some perspective. So I started there. Moved to General Motors for a period of time. And then I ended up working for Magna International, a large tier one supplier to the automotive industry. Started off in HR in a health and safety role. And it kind of progressed through the company, did an HR coordinator role. Then I ended up being a continuous improvement manager, a quality manager. And then I had the opportunity to go to Mexico as an assistant general manager. So I went there to Mexico 6 years. Great, wonderful experience. Difficult at times, for sure, challenging. And then I came back to Canada as a general manager for Magna. And then in 2015, I left Canada and I wanted to come to the US. I wanted to do the three-peat. I wanted to work in Canada, Mexico, and the United States. Yeah. And then ultimately I ran a seating plant in Cleveland for a short period of time before I was recruited to Martin Rea, which is another Canadian automotive supplier. And then ended up in Spartanburg as the president and CEO in March of 2020, exactly around the same exact time as COVID arrived.
Wow, lucky you. Before we get into that, what do you say to people who are like, look, you know, I am not going to work an hourly job. Like they think, you know, they got to come in and work a salary. What do you say to people who have that perspective?
Yeah. I mean, I would challenge that thought. I think, you know, the what I feel gives me an advantage as a leader is I understand what it's like to be an hourly employee. I've done the work. You know, I've been out there and I've experienced some hardships and some difficult things. And I also have tremendous respect for those individuals on the floor because they work a lot harder than I do. And I think that fundamentally is important. So I think I would recommend actually that, you know, and I've done this before when I've started with a new company, I actually go out and do the jobs. I'll go out and actually
physically
do the jobs. The employees get a real kick out of it. They laugh at me. I'm sweating. I'm struggling to keep up. but it shows that I'm humble enough to understand I'm not them. They're great. And I'm just trying to learn.
So what is an hourly job that you've done that a lot of people might be surprised to hear?
Oh, well, I mean, Freightliner would be the best example. Doing that manufacturing, I did a bunch of different things there, but I, you know, basically had to lift steering gears and frame rails and all kinds of different stuff that, and I did some, so I worked at Ford Motor Company as a student, on a midnight shift, building Tempo Topaz. So that dates me a little bit. Right. And I was putting in spare tires in the trunks of those cars as they were going 50 an hour. And I was running behind those vehicles, trying to keep up. So, but again, and I also, here's another thing, Ben, I learned very quickly that I wasn't built for that kind of work. And I wasn't going to be able to do that for a career. I just, and I thought that's probably what motivated me, to continue learning and then evolving.
So process of elimination. You tried a lot of different stuff, a lot of parts of the business to kind of hone in on what you wanted to do. Right. Was there one moment where you said, you know what? I can see myself as CEO one day.
Never. But I will say that, I always believed that I could do things that others told me I couldn't. And I had great mentors along the way. Mm-hmm. One in particular was a wonderful mentor who pushed me hard. And I remember when I had the opportunity to be the AGM, he was part of that. He was part of getting me to become an assistant general manager in Magna. And he said to me, I remember the words very specifically, Mark, you're wonderful. You're not a technical guy. You're not a tool maker. And in Magna, if you're not a tool maker, you're not a general manager, at least in those days. You weren't. You had to be a tool maker because Frank Chironic, the founder of Magna, was a tool maker, and it was kind of a prerequisite. And I remember him saying to me, you should be so happy where you're at today. And I remember thinking to myself, but I'm not. I'm humble, but I want to continue. I want to learn. So I told him I wanted to be a general manager, and he just shook his head and said, Mark, you're never going to be a general manager. You're not a tool maker. Well, 5 years later, I became a general manager. So I think that, and that's what my advice to some of your listeners and the younger leaders that want to aspire to these roles is never give up. Never give up, and never let anybody tell you can't do it.
It sounds like, too, you're a guy who works a little bit of chip on it, a little bit of a chip on his shoulder. Like you got something to prove out there. Is that the case?
Maybe not in a negative fashion, but in a positive fashion. Yeah, I had something to prove. I didn't have an Ivy League education. I didn't have I wasn't a technical person. I was always one step behind, and I was always chasing and trying to get something that maybe I rightfully didn't deserve via my education or other. So I did feel that way. And I certainly had that vision of never give up, never.
Sounds like a leader who's hungry for results, hungry for impact. I've heard that I heard in some of my research that your leadership philosophy was most impacted by, quote, watching poor leaders.
Yeah.
Which made me chuckle when I saw it. So what did you learn by watching poor leaders in your career?
Well, I learned as much as I learned watching the good ones. So I had some great mentors, my great leaders, and I had some not so great leaders, but both perspectives were valuable in my personal leadership development because I saw what worked, what didn't work. I saw how certain leaders or how great leaders participated, followed up, listened, were active listeners. And then I saw the other side of people who were abusive. And I use this example, influence. The great leaders were influential. The poor leaders had the power button. So the easy button is power, right? I have the title. I have the position. Do what I say. I don't need to explain myself. Saw lots of that. And then I saw some very influential leaders, and where they would influence, they would listen, they would participate, but they had high expectations and they had demanded a lot, but you never felt, you felt that they contribute, you felt good around them. You wanted to work for those people. You never want to let them down. I remember very specifically one leader. I was, if I ever let him down, I would be devastated, just thinking about that, where I've had some really, really tough leaders that are yellers and screamers and throw stuff around. And I would just had zero respect for those individuals, right? Just could never understand why anybody would want to work in that environment.
Yeah. To me, it's sort of like the yin and yang of leadership development. Everyone's probably thinking about the great leaders they had during their career, or they're reading books about great leadership moves in the military and in business and this and that. But the yin and yang side, it also, like, I really like what you said about it's equally valuable to study the ones that weren't effective.
Yeah.
And especially in your own career, because those are the ones that you had the most experience with.
Absolutely.
So reflecting on that is pretty cool. Now, one of the things in my research too that I ran across is you described having one-on-one meetings with every employee as, quote, life-changing. Yeah. And I would love for you to tell us about that experience. And is that just at your current company, or is that a philosophy that you've had for a long time? And what's been the impact?
Yeah, it actually, that example was when I became the general manager at Magna. I went back to Canada and I met with, you know, was 550 employees, I think it was, 30 minutes each. I meet here one-on-one with employees too, but I'm doing it a little bit different fashion. The one thing I learned when I did that example is I took on this challenge. You know, it came to me one day and I said, you know, I need to sit with every employee. And here's why. The philosophy was, just because I show up one day and now I'm the general manager, why should anybody give me any respect or believe anything? I have zero credibility at that point. Mm-hmm. And I thought I had to earn it. I needed to earn people's respect and credibility, tell them who I am. Hey, I'm just a guy. I got married with kids and that. I got the same problems you have. So I wanted to sit down and I wanted to have that conversation. And really, we didn't talk about work. I wanted to make it. I just wanted to know who they were. And I would basically say, please tell me about yourself. You know, anything you want to share, I'll do the same. And then I talk about expectations in the end. And I would always say to them, look, I have, you know, expectations. One, the main one being, you know, what are your expectations of me as your leader? Mm-hmm. I wanted to clarify that because I often think that employees think that because I'm the general manager, I can do whatever I want, which is not true. And I wanted to make sure that we had some clarity around that. But anyway, back to the life-changing point, I sat through and I'll tell you, you know, it was interesting. 95% of the people were participating. I had a few people that didn't want to say anything, and that's fine. Okay. I talked for a few minutes and then we ended the conversation. 95% were open and honest. They wanted to talk about their families. They wanted to talk about their kids. They wanted to talk about how passionate they were about the company. I had people cry. I had people, you know, I had all kinds of different reactions, and that was the life-changing thing for me. Mm. And what I did, you know, I did the math in my head. Probably 60% of the people told me one thing that stuck with me, and they said, please just tell me if I'm doing something wrong. And that resonated with me. I thought, why is it that people have that desire to know that? Or why is it that they're asking that? Maybe we're not doing a good enough job giving feedback. Maybe we're not telling our employees, maybe we're not providing that. So that was something that stuck out to me. And, you know, we really focused on doing a better job of, you know, not just telling them when they're doing good, but also giving opportunity, you know, where they can improve, helping them to improve and different things like that. So that was really life-changing. But I tell you, I knew everybody's name, 550 people. I knew their names and I knew one thing about them. So if their kid was in hockey or if this, they had, you know, something about them, I knew that. And that was a life-changing event for me. You know, I built respect with those people, you know, and it was a great experience. And I encourage people. I know it's difficult, and why I do it differently today, because going back to when I started, I committed to do a 550 people. And the problem was doing the 550 people, as you can appreciate, it took me over a year to do it. I went on their shift. I went to the third shift, second shift, first shift, but it took me over a year to do. And I worried that I would miss somebody. And it was the one individual, if I missed them, it would become a totally negative thing. And that's why I would do it again. I do it a little bit differently now, but it was a life-changing event. Super humbling for me as a leader.
Yeah. So did you get to see, or what did you notice after you had those from an employee performance perspective?
Well, and that goes to the engaged workforce, right? I mean, I truly believe the secret sauce, one of them is an engaged workforce. Mm-hmm. You know, I really worked on getting the commitment from the people, you know, and listening to the people.
Yeah.
And that brought some credibility, but it brought us together as a team. And I saw performance pick up. I saw more employees come forward with concerns, feeling confident they could come to me in an open door environment and bring issues forward without the fear of reprisal. And that was one of the things of building that relationship was, if we have issues, it's okay. Just bring them forward so we can fix them. And we did see improvement. We got better quality performance. We got better operational performance over time. We got more engagement from the people. Absolutely. I truly believe it works.
You know, that's really interesting. I think it's so important for leaders who want to foster that. Like they say they want a culture of openness and open door related policy. They want ideas from their employees, but it's so hard to foster that because even if you're the most open, friendly leader, every employee brings their own work history with them. And yes. Maybe they had a time where they went over there, they thought they went over their boss's head and they gotten in trouble for rate, you know, escalating an issue too far up. And Nigel Travis, who's been on the show, who's the CEO of Dunkin', he has a book called, it's about challenge culture. And he talks about a lot of the same things that you're really a proponent of, is opening that up. But yet it's so darn challenging. And I think having the commitment and the perseverance as a leader and the energy and organizational skills to have one-on-ones with every employee is a great way to get there, because the best way for a leader, I think, to exhibit that they're open to communicating is proactively communicating with frontline employees like you are, where you're doing the job initially, yep. And you're inviting them to that first conversation.
Yeah, it creates cool. A bond. You have a bond with that employee, you know, and I did tell them very specifically that if they have concerns and things, they should come to me. And, you know, and again, but the discipline is to not, you know, to your point, you know, you have, when they come to you with a problem, you got to take it seriously and you need to resolve it. You need to provide an answer. You know, you can't just have them come to you with ideas and nothing happens. You know, with it, that doesn't
yeah.
work.
Yeah. Well, as soon as they give you an idea, nothing happens with that. They'll just say, he's just like all the other bosses that I've had in the past.
That's
well,
right.
Give them an idea, nothing happens. What do you, you know, how do you walk the line of you're open this dialogue with all these 500 plus employees or all the, you know, over 1,000 employees you have now? And say it gets to be too much, like too many people are showing up, there are too many issues, or maybe there's like personal things they're bringing in the conversation. How do you walk the line as a leader of being as an engaged leader, encouraging their engagement involvement without opening maybe Pandora's box that a lot of leaders might be afraid of?
Yeah. You know, I encourage the employees to talk to their supervisors first. So I don't discourage them to come to me, but I encourage them to use to follow the process. So talk to your supervisor, talk to your manager. If you're not getting the response that you think you deserve, you come to me.
Okay.
So I always push that direction because it's fair. I mean, the other thing is I shouldn't be circumventing the supervisors and managers as well. They need the opportunity to fix and resolve issues.
Yeah.
And I want to make sure that they have that. Really, I'm the backstop to when that doesn't get resolved, when an employee is not satisfied with the answer, then they have the opportunity to come to the open door process. And then one other thing I would add, and I share this with my leadership team here, it's okay to say no. We don't have to say yes, but we owe employees an answer. That's dignity and respect.
Nice.
When they ask a question, you give an answer. It doesn't have to be yes, but but the respectful thing is you give an answer. And this goes back to my experience of the poor leaders. Poor leaders would come. I remember being on the floor and asking a question and never getting an answer, never getting follow up, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. And that was a problem for me. That was a problem. Mm. If I'm an employee and I'm valued, and, you know, companies talk about their employees being the most valuable asset they have. If I'm valued as an employee, then don't I deserve the opportunity to get feedback? Right, wrong, or indifferent, I should get feedback.
Versus getting a pat on the head and saying, I'll get back to you later with that. And then 6 months later, you still haven't heard back.
Exactly right.
Yeah, and the leader's hoping, I'm hoping they don't remember the fact that I said I was get back, but the employee probably does remember.
They're
not going to bring it up again.
Not probably. The employee never, ever forgets.
It's
the example, right? Yeah. You do 50 great things. Nobody remembers any of them. You do that one bad thing or one wrong thing and everybody remembers it. That's a perfect example of that. If an employee is asking a question, it's because it's important to them. It matters to them and they don't forget about that. So they won't forget it. So that's an important lesson, you know, and that's why it's so important for the leadership team. You have to get back to people. You owe them an answer. Doesn't have to be yes, but you owe them an answer.
So as president and CEO of Spartanburg Steel Products, what do people need to understand about the organization today?
You know, this is a 42-year-old company. We've been a BMW supplier for many years. We're in a transition. So we are, we coined it SSP 2.0. So 1.0 is the past. It's the foundation. 2.0 is the future. And 2.0 really encompasses leadership, engagement, culture, you know, right people, right seats. I mean, we're a lot of focus on making our company better, making our results better, partnering with our customers. So we've got a lot of employees that have got 25 years or more here. I mean, we've got great tenured service.
We
manufacture for a lot of them, but we're in transition. We're a company that has a vision to be a world-class company. We know we're not, but we have a vision to be, and we would pursue that vision each and every day. And I know that'll make us better.
Yeah, fantastic. I love the vision. I love the way that you're talking about it. You're acknowledging the past and the long tenured employees with an eye towards the future.
Right.
Which is a great place to be. What advice would you, looking back over your own career and other employees that you've worked with in the past, what advice would you give your younger self today?
You know, I think it goes back to what we spoke about earlier. Never give up, never give up. I mean, there were times when I questioned, what am I doing? I remember specifically when I went to Mexico, I went by myself, my wife, my 3-year-old daughter, and my 6-year-old son stayed back in Canada for about a month before they joined me in Mexico. Mm-hmm. And I remember very specifically getting back from work one day in Mexico to the hotel and almost coming to tears, asking, what am I doing here? Like, what have I done? I've never left Canada. I'm now in Mexico. Far from home. I got my family en route. And I remember asking myself, what am I doing here? I've made a terrible mistake. Well, it didn't end up being a terrible mistake, but it certainly was a challenge. I would just give that advice. I would go back and just never give up. Attitude is a huge differentiator. I believe that, and work hard. These are the things that I would encourage myself to remember, because there were times when I really, really
thought. Where in Mexico were you?
I was in Hermosillo, which is about 2 hours south of Nogales. Tucson, Nogales, Arizona, or Nogales, Mexico, right on the coast, the Sierra Cortez there. So we supplied to Ford Motor Company down there, where they built the Lincoln MKZ and the Ford Fusion, I believe it was.
Yeah. Yes. Wow. Cool. Never give up. Which reminds me, there's an old story of Winston Churchill. He was giving some sort of commencement speech, and he got up and he just said something, I'm paraphrasing. He stood up and said, "Never, ever, ever give up." And then I think he sat down right after that. They're like, "What? That's your speech?"
That's right.
But yeah, a good one. Yeah, it's stuck with people. So let's move ahead just a little bit. What's the one trait that you wish, Mark, you could instill in every employee, and why?
I guess I would say ambition. I would encourage employees to think like the owners of the company.
Oh, nice.
If every employee were to think that they owned this company, how would they behave? And that's my encouragement. It's really ambition. I always talk about loyalty and integrity and kindness. I think kindness is a really important trait, and especially in these days. But I would encourage employees to be ambitious and think about, if you own this company, how would you behave? What decisions would you make? Would they be the same as you make normally? And that's one of the things I would encourage.
Yeah, that's sort of like the P&L mindset, where everyone's got their own business, kind of like their own checkbook, right? They're managing their own business, yet it can be challenging to instill that. If you walked in tomorrow and every single employee was ambitious, how would it look different if you walked in tomorrow?
Oh, man. It would be different, right? It would be very different. They would be questioning many things. They would be asking why we're doing this. Does this make sense? We should do it this way. They'd be bringing forth a ton of recommendations on improvements and ideas on how to get better and do things, and we have pockets of that, but we don't have that across the board. I mean, I'm sure every CEO, every president, every leader of any organization would just love to have an engaged workforce to a point where they're pushing the organization, right? They're pushing the organization or pulling the organization along with their ideas and their ambition and these kinds of things. So, I mean, that's the dream. That's what every leader wants. We certainly try to get that. We try to use different tools to get there. But that would be quite a workforce.
It reminds me of what Jim Collins talks about in Good to Great with the flywheel approach, where you've got to work so hard to get that wheel turning. But once you get that momentum going, it just carries itself. And I like what you said about, it's great for them to be, they will be pushing the ideas up to you, versus you having to pull them and create that kind of momentum.
Right. So it is, and that's the whole employee engagement piece, and I've spoken about this in the past. I truly believe culture is a secret weapon in any organization. It really, really is. And you have to have an engaged workforce. You know, it's interesting, Ben, I have the opportunity to go see other companies and partners and suppliers and different mm-hmm. things. And when I walk out onto the shop floor, I'm to a point now, 30 seconds to 45 seconds in, I think I can pretty much figure out how that organization is running. And there's some points that mm-hmm. really stand out to me, right? Obviously, the environment. Is it clean? Is it organized? Is it bright? How are the employees? Are they smiling? Do they look happy? Do they look unhappy? What about the employee bathrooms? Are the employee bathrooms clean and respectful in that? Or is there graffiti written all over the walls? Mm-hmm. You know, so there's lots of markers. But you also, my point is, you also walk into an organization and you can feel very quickly the pulse. Is it chaotic? Is it, you know, frustrated? Is it, you know, or is it a rhythm? They got rhythm. Mm-hmm. They're moving, but you got rhythm and you see the people smiling and they're working. So two differences that you can really feel when you go out to an organization.
Yeah, I love that. I love the idea. Hey, you want to get a pulse. You want to get the pulse of a company in 30 seconds. Go check out the employee bathrooms.
I'm telling you.
And just see the quality and how I can totally see that, right? How are they set up? Are they clean? Is there paper? You know, are there hand dryers? You know, what is the status? And I actually think back to my year, I actually worked with a company, a textile company, and I spent a lot of time in Mexico and Latin America too, and a lot of the factories there. And I can say, yeah, there's a difference. Just go in the bathroom and just check it out.
In my past life, this goes back to one of those things where I scratched my head and said, what am I doing? I joined a large manufacturing company here in the US, and it was a large facility, about a million square feet, but it was underperforming, had a lot of issues, a lot of culture issues, et cetera. And I went there. And on my first day, I talk about this every time because I think it's just so powerful. My first day, you know, I asked the management team to go for a walk on the floor, but I followed. I want to observe management's behavior. I want to see how they're performing. Guys, I know this organization is losing hemorrhaging money. They've got huge customer relationship issues. They got huge quality issues. So it's driven from only one place, in my opinion. So I follow the management team. Of course, they break every safety rule possible. They walk by garbage on the floor. They're got earplugs hanging out. They're talking on their phones, all that stuff. Went for a walk and came back. And I realized in that moment that the problem in this organization was all management, was all leadership. It was their behavior. Walking by garbage on the floor was incredible to me. How can you walk by when you own it? You're the leadership team. You own it. And you walk by a pop can on the ground like it doesn't exist. It's incredible. It's incredible to think that leaders can think that it's okay to do that, yet hold employees accountable to clean their areas, et cetera. Crazy.
Yes. Yeah. Powerful stuff. Leading starts with just by leading by example. And that is the easiest and the most difficult as a parent, as a manager, right? Lead yourself first and people will do as you do versus, I mean, it's funny walking through a site, picking up trash, the other employees see that and they're more likely to do it versus you, you know, doing some Six Sigma, you know, dictations to them. They just see you do it, taking care of the workspace and their workspace. How impactful is that, man?
It was hugely impactful because, you know, I can't, and here's the other thing. I can't stand in front of employees at an employee meeting and say, you know, I need you to pick up garbage and I need you to clean the plant unless I'm willing to do it first. So the first guy that's doing it is me. And we do this here. I mean, here in Sparta, we do 2 hours a week. We go out and clean. We sweat, we dirty and filthy, and the employees laugh. They love it but I have no problem to ask any employee to clean up after themselves. Zero, because I'm the first one to do it. The parking lot behind me, we painted all the curbs. Management that we did because I wanted the employees to stay focused on producing parts, et cetera. We went out and painted the parking lot. Things like that it's to your point. Lead by example. Do. Don't just talk about it. I mean, so many companies talk all these great stories about leadership and all these wonderful things, but they don't do the hard work. The hard work is you got to lead by example and you have to be the pillar of perfection at times. You can't walk by garbage on the floor. You need to wear your safety equipment. You need to follow the rules. That's what leadership is. And I want to just tie into that story. When I went to that plant, I visited the bathrooms, the employee bathrooms. Not the one close to management's offices. I went out into the facility and I went to a bathroom at the back of the plant. And then I walked in, the stall doors were ripped off. So there was no stall doors. They were ripped off. And on the within a bunch of other graffiti I can't mention, one of them said, "This company sucks." And I remember thinking to myself, "Wow, man, what have I done? You know, here I am. Now I'm responsible to fix this." And it was clear to me that the employees absolutely did not have zero respect for this organization and this management team. Of course, I understood why. But then it became a challenge to fix it. And that fixing it was all about leading by example. Of course, many of those leaders I just described to you that walked through and didn't pick up garbage didn't last long in the organization. And we had to work very hard to build credibility with that workforce. It worked in the end. And I'll tell you, man, what an uphill battle.
Yeah. Wow. What a great story. Get a simple tool to approximate your cost of turnover in 10 seconds or less. Right now, go to benfanning.com/turnover. Did you know the average cost of turnover is $235,975 per employee per year? If you're like most leaders, you don't know your number. Go to benfanning.com/turnover right now and download the simple tool to start getting a handle on this catastrophic cost. So just a few more questions here, Mark. We often work with leaders around the catastrophic cost of turnover. At some levels of the organization, our research shows that can cost over $235,000 per employee per year.
Yeah.
Do you think tracking the cost of turnover is important? Is that something that leaders should be watching out for?
Yeah, I absolutely think so. Turnover is a huge cost. There's so many hidden costs in turnover for sure. Mm-hmm. And it goes back to one of the strategies we've deployed here is the right people. It's Collins, right? I mean, the right people in the right seats of the bus. This is critical in every case. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, use an example. If you put Tom Brady as the defensive end versus the quarterback, you know, the results are going to change.
Yeah.
It's the same in business, right? If you have the right leader with the right skill set and the right attitude, et cetera, in the right seats, it matters. I've had personal experience. I've made mistakes of my own in hiring. I actually made so many mistakes. I made a book. So I am in this book, My Worst Hire.
My Worst Hire. It's right. A whole book about it. So it must be pretty in depth.
It is. And there's many examples.
It's been a really bad hire.
It was a bad hire. It was my hire. It was a mistake that I made. And, I denied it in my mind for the longest time, but I had to deal with it. And I look back and I saw all the signs. They were there. But again, to your point, yeah, turnover is huge. You gotta, and again, I encourage, and we try to do this. And again, I speak as if we're in perfection. We're not. We make lots of mistakes here, but put the effort on the front end. Put the effort on the front end. Use the tools that are available to really screen candidates, to really understand and make sure you both for both parties, for the candidate and for the company, you're making the right connection and the right marriage so that it's successful in the end. Because turnover is not only just the cost is one, but the interruption to the organization is also a huge impact.
Oh, yeah. It definitely impacts business. And if you've got, I mean, it sounds like you've got a reputation for retaining people for long periods of time in the organization. And I mean, you can't replace 25 years of experience overnight in a company.
No, it's costly. It is very costly. It is very costly.
And so with your worst hire, what was it like going through that experience and realizing, you know what, we've got to change things up in that role?
Yeah. Well, the individual was an HR person and it just was treating people horribly. Like, you know, that's why it's kind of like a Jekyll and Hyde situation. I mean, in the face of leadership, very professional, and when dealing with employees, very abusive, but hidden away and not very visible. So it was hard to uncover for a while, but did some damage. You know, so there was a lot of me personally putting my own effort into resolving it with employees and explaining that we made a mistake and here's why, and here's what we're doing about it. So, you know, I had to repair that. I owned it because I made the hire and I owned bringing it back. And the person that we hired to replace was a wonderful individual, and she did a fantastic job of also mending those fences.
Yeah. I love how you sort of publicly fell on your sword, right? And said, "Hey, it wasn't the right fit for that role. I made the hire." And then you took ownership to fix it and resolve it. And it sounds like it went well. I think that's an important note for people.
It is. And my team pushed me, though, by the way. You know, I denied it for a little while because I truly believe that, this can't be true. But my team kept pushing me that I needed to look deeper.
What are three success strategies that all employees need to understand?
Focus and execution are key. Hmm. You know, again,
Don't take your eye off the ball, huh?
No, and well, it's an inch wide, mile deep thing, right? Here we follow Covey's four disciplines of execution.
So
we have three wildly important goals, and then each leader has three wildly important goals linked to the plant wide three wildly important goals. You cannot accomplish 30 goals. You cannot do that. I've tried many times and failed.
Yeah, every listener probably has been in that situation where they've got more things listed as goals than they do on their grocery list, and probably not going too well.
You will not be successful. When we follow this strategy, we have three wildly important. We're knocking them out of the park. This year, we're already exceeding our goals on all three cases because we're laser focused on those. Mm. We're not focused on 30 things. You can't do a mile wide, inch deep. We go an inch wide, mile deep type of focus. You can knock out three out of the park. You can't knock out 30. The other one I would say is culture is a secret weapon. Like we talked, engagement, engaged workforce and culture are immeasurable in terms of driving a business and performance. And the last one I would say is right people in the right seats. Again, I feel very passionate that if you do not have the right players in the right seats, you will only get a certain percentage of advancement. You will not get all the way. So those three things to me are absolutely important.
Yeah, some excellent, excellent points in there. And one of the things that really resonated with me was that idea about limiting your focus, because like you say, you've only got so much energy and attention, and your people do too. And a lot of leaders, I think they forget about that, right? They want to go after everything at one time. I'm sure you'd love to attack so many different things.
Sure.
But as a leader, being able to help other people narrow the focus, narrow their focus, and really allow them to go deep. I mean, that's how you get the momentum going, right?
That is. And our goals are the three wildly important goals are around revenue growth, profitability, and customer satisfaction. What else do we want?
I mean, those are three big ones.
If we knock those three out of the park, everything else falls in line. So that's it. And you're right. And by the way, when people have 30 goals, they're frustrated because they're not accomplishing anything. They're pushing a robot.
You look back and you're like, what did I do all year? We did a little bit of this and a little bit of that versus boom, we went deep and we got that big one done. People feel better about themselves.
They totally feel better about themselves. Absolutely. They're engaged.
Let's wrap this thing up. What are your parting thoughts for our listeners of the CEO sessions today?
You know, I would say for those who are pursuing their career to grow into the C-suite, trying to grow into this role, I think things that we talked about today, I mean, it's attitude is everything. To me, personally, if you got the attitude of never give up and ambition and you've got integrity and you've got, you listen to people, you respect people, these things are far more powerful than other things of, technical aptitude. You got to be smart, but your attitude and your ambition will go far more for you if you engage that. And again, I will go back to what we talked about, right? Focus and execution, focus on culture and people. These are the things that drive businesses forward.
Perfect. Thanks, Mark.
Pleasure.
Want to boost your productivity and decision-making? Get vital insights from each episode delivered directly to your inbox. A great resource, whether you've listened to the episode or not. Go to benfanning.com/insight.
Ben Fanning is a number one best-selling author, Inc. magazine columnist, and CEO of The Fanning Group, an international consultancy and corporate training company. To learn how they can help your organization, go to benfanning.com.